This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money as we welcome you back. Bar Canada at the D, hanging out, watching some international soccer. We were watching Wimbledon earlier. That has come to an end now for the day, as we've got a lot to break down here, as well as get into some NFL talk and NFC North previews later on this hour. I'm Ben Wilson. Jared Smith next to me. Jared has already cashed a ticket. Shout out.
Yes, we have.
Both teams to score. Cash is in the first half. But it's been an interesting first 45, much different than the build-up would have suggested here. Spain, 2-1 lead, thanks to goals by Danny Olmo, as well as Yamin Lamal and then Randall Colomwani after he had scored a ninth-minute goal. That was the opener for France. It was all Spain. But what really stood out to me here, Jared, 2-1 as we get ready for the second half in a few minutes, this was a classic case of the elite clubs taking advantage on a very few opportunities in front of goal. There were three shots combined on target. All three go in for goals, and Spain should have had really, honestly, a third that had gone in. But the point is, Jared, despite all that, your expected goals here, Spain, 0.73, France, 0.43, yet it is 2-1, leading me to believe the bet to make is probably an under second half here, which is 1.5. Now, it's minus 170. You have to pay a pretty good tax, but certainly this feels like either 2-1 Spain or a 2-2 draw. France is able to send this year to extra time.
I said it the second they scored the 2-1. I said I would not be shocked if this was the final score. Because, again, soccer's weird, man. It's just weird. It's one of the reasons that I got into it, and then it was one of the reasons that I got out of it, was just because of the extreme variance that is involved with the shots. The goal is so stinking big. And it's so hard to score. It's just, it's a really unique sport to bet. I think it's a sport that every gambler, when they're starting out, should at least look at. Because just like we did earlier, you handicap one thing. We need one goal. And you win a bet. So I think it's, I don't want to call it easy, but it's simple. And it's simple to kind of look at and say, hey, that number's really off compared to what we've seen from this team in prior games. And that's where you take advantage of. That's how the best bettors gamble. They don't gamble to win. They gamble because they're beating the market. If it wins, they do win most of the time, more often than not, because they're beating the market. But their number one goal is to make bets that are not applicable, or I guess not in line with what the market price should be. And when you consider, as you mentioned at the top of the show, the firepower with both of these offenses and just the rhetoric we heard coming into the match, these matches are unique. We have multiple days of lead up. The odds have been up there for, what, 4 days now. This market has been absolutely pummeled to the under, because all we've heard is France hasn't scored and they don't give up goals. That's literally the only thing I've heard for the last 4 days. So when I saw that plus money for the BTTS, like, it just, it screams at you. And yes, it very much goes against what the obvious handicap is for the game, but sometimes the number is just too good to pass up. I thought 2-1 was a bit of a aggressive prediction for this game, but when I give out a BTTS, I kind of had to at least go 1-1, and I thought we were going to get a result. I really did think Spain, I thought this was going to be the toughest match France has played in the entire tournament. And you could tell they have not put any distance between themselves, whereas Spain has put distance between themselves and other very good teams. I know Spain's played an easier schedule, but they're still, these are still the highest level of European soccer, and Spain made some of these teams look really foolish, where France was just kind of clawing by. So I thought Spain was kind of the inside track here to get the second goal, but I felt very confident both teams were getting one.
Spain now up to minus 390 to advance. You could have got them well over 2-1, Jared, after going down 1-0. Yeah. France plus 270 as they have just kicked off from Munich there in Germany, and we're underway in the second 45. We'll also get a thought preview here of the Netherlands-England coming up later in the show. That is our second semifinal to be played tomorrow. We'll be on the air live for that as well. England a slight favorite over the Dutch in that second semifinal. It was a great day just to start off here. If you were looking to bet, watch sports across the pond, Wimbledon quarterfinals get underway today. We had one pretty big upset as the men's side of the draw now, Jared. 36 matches have gone to five sets, which is the most ever of any Grand Slam tournament in the open era for a single tournament. And while there was some injury involved here, it was a big reason why Daniil Medvedev prevailed over Jannik Sinner. If you were watching that match, Sinner, who was the tournament favorite, the number one seed in the top half of the draw, was clearly not able to move with his typical back and forth ability in the fifth set. Medvedev wins that match, though, as a consensus plus 350 dog. And he's now set to take on Carlos Alcaraz in our top half of the draw semifinal coming up later on in the week. Alcaraz was down a set and a break here to Tommy Paul. Also a pretty big favorite today, Alcaraz, just like Sinner was. But Alcaraz is able to come back, wins in four sets. It's interesting. As much as you would think, you know, Alcaraz has been priced through the moon as this guy who was viewed to be the next great player, yet we've seen some of his shortcomings on grass. His serving super inconsistent throughout the tournament, and it was really bad to start the match today. You won't get away with that against Medvedev, who is being a bit disrespected by the market. And again, it took injury today to overcome Jannik Sinner, but Medvedev's still a player that is really tough mentally and is always a lurker, especially on a surface like grass.
Yeah, and I don't have the context with tennis like you do, but when you see these names and you see these plus prices next to them, again, it's one thing for Alcaraz to be a big favorite against someone in the early rounds, but I always say this when Djokovic, and by the way, he's a pretty big favorite too tomorrow in his quarterfinal match against Demonar from Australia. Anytime you see, and again, just compare that. Like, yeah, Djokovic, a $3 favorite, but he's facing Alex Demonar. No knock on Demonar, but Daniel Medvedev is just like a much more prestigious, much more accomplished player. So you see a big price tag next to these very talented players, very similar to the handicap in this France-Spain match. Like, hey, yeah, of course, the run of play says Alcaraz should blow him out, but it's still one of the highest level tennis players in the world. It won't take much of a dip in Alcaraz's game to keep this match very tight.
The one thing I've noticed too with Alcaraz, and this leads into where you can struggle at Wimbledon on the grass, the fast service, you have to be locked in as a server if you were on the men's side of the draw. Where Alcaraz has struggled, his serves out wide from the deuce side of the court have been really inconsistent, to the point where he was missing so many first serves in the net to that direction that he was serving a lot of down the tee and body, which, again, when you're talking, Jared, 125-mile-an-hour serves, if you all of a sudden take out a third of where you potentially have to return, it makes your life a whole lot easier as a returner. And we saw early, Tommy Paul was able to take advantage. At one point in that match, Alcaraz was only winning about 55% of his first serve points, which is a really, really low number for, A, a player of Alcaraz's ilk on the serve, and, B, the surface that you're seeing at Wimbledon. Because of how good of a returner Daniil Medvedev is, Alcaraz will have to be much better consistency-wise with that serve. Now, it got better as the match went on against Paul, but when you're talking about a price that is set to the degree of Alcaraz, I'm seeing here on the opening prices minus 340, Medvedev plus 280. We've already seen how back and forth these matches have gone in general. I would be looking at Medvedev plus the sets here, would be looking at games total over once those get released. Depending on what is a better bet, it's worth kind of diving through here, and I'm trying to figure out. We'll be able to talk more about it tomorrow, Jared, since we have an off day for those two guys. But, yeah, Alcaraz should not be this high of a favorite considering the inconsistencies he has shown on his serve all tournament.
Is that your favorite? Because I one of the reasons that I haven't really fully got into tennis betting is because there's just so many other ways to play it that I know straight money lines usually not the way. I have some friends that really like the game spreads and also the over-unders on the games. Is that your favorite? Like, what's your best kind of strategy for when you're trying to find a value play on a big whopper favorite like Alcaraz or on the other side?
Sure. Games, to me, it's the games handicap can get a little tricky simply because in men's tennis best of five, you're always at risk for the set that goes wrong.
6-1.
And
they
the player
just punt
on it. Punts, right?
Yep.
And that can sometimes completely throw it off. Now, I think it also matters within the context, though, of who you're watching. Carlos Alcaraz has had a couple of sets like that in this tournament where he has just punted on the set. So if you are looking to bet a games handicap where Carlos Alcaraz is involved, and if you're betting games handicap, you're probably looking at the underdog. That's how we gravitate toward these things. That is a good player to bet it against because Alcaraz has been very streaky, I would say, in match with his serve. Now, over five sets, right, we are seeing 3-4-hour matches. You would expect that to level out.
100%.
But there have been individual stretches where Alcaraz has just not been as consistent as you see him on clay, where he is so hard to beat because of his court coverage and because of the way serving just isn't the same sort of importance on clay because of how the surface slows down the speed of the ball and neutralizes the pace that you naturally have on serve. So it's one of those things. I'm waiting to see how the market starts to populate here, but that is how I would look at it in particular. I think as a result of that, Jared, the context, as you say, always matters between the specific individuals, but that'll be the best way to look at it there for matches that will be on Thursday in the men's and women's semis.
You can bet on total breaks, too. which is also another interesting point, because again, if the services are not as strong on grass, you would think that there's more breaks, right? If the serves aren't as good, more opportunities to break. So I'm sure the market's pricing that in, but it's always interesting to your point about Alcaraz when you deep dive and you have the context of what's actually happening in match instead of just betting Daniil Medvedev to win because we think Alcaraz can be a little streaky. There are ways to, you know, really hone in on something like that and extract some value.
Yeah, for tomorrow, I certainly see both favorites. This is the men's bottom half quarters. Taylor Fritz, who came from two sets down to shock Sasha Zverev over the weekend. I see Fritz taking out Lorenzo Musetti, who's about nearly a $5 favorite here in Fritz. He's getting a lot of betting support. Musetti's had a great Cinderella run. And Dimonor's just not at the level. I don't believe Jared is more of a smaller, diminutive counterpuncher to really trouble Novak Djokovic. You beat Djokovic on this surface with power, especially with Djokovic coming back from his knee surgery just a few weeks ago. Djokovic about a $3, 5 cent favorite consensus. I expect both of them to advance. What I would say for tomorrow on the women's side, to me, Elena Rybakina and Elina Svitolina is the de facto championship match in the women's quarter. Rybakina is plus 125 to win the whole tournament. She's minus 290 tomorrow. If she wins that match, which I expect to be a good one, but I expect Rybakina to prevail, all of a sudden, she'll be a pretty good minus money favorite, Jared, to win the whole thing.
Nice.
It's been a wild, wide open women's draw so far.
And the futures market, too, is another way that you can play it forward if you see something like that playing out.
100%. Jasmine Paolini with an upset win today. She's had another Cinderella run, the Italian over American Emma Navarro, 2-1. And Donna Vekic, first career semi in her 43rd try to Grand Slam in three sets over Lulu Sun, is about a $3 favorite as well. Speaks to the carnage so far on the women's side. When we come back on Sharp Money, we'll talk a little NFL, start some NFC North previews next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month. And lucky for you, the VSIN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. To access this invaluable guide, you have to be a VSIN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. Get a full year of VSIN Pro for just $199 instead of the usual $240. And as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That is 13 months of access to everything VSIN offers, including daily best bets, around-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, data, and all our special edition guides like the NFL Guide to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide with this fantastic offer. It is vsin.com/subscribe where you go. Throw in that promo code SHARP to get 13 months of VSIN Pro for only $199 and gain instant access to our NFL betting guide. Back here on Sharp Money, 58th minute now of our first of two Euro semifinals. I believe we just had a pitch invasion, which is always awesome.
Nice.
Cameras won't show it, but I just saw the guys in the yellow vests running crazily.
It's always fun.
Maybe too many pints and too many brats combined.
Too many brats.
Honestly, if somebody gets like absolutely destroyed on a you got to replay it. I just want to see that guy get humiliated.
Usually you see it on social media.
I know, but
there's
it's like
one guy here in the sports book, or I guess in the bar area, that's rooting for Spain. And it's very entertaining because he's the only person that is watching this match intently besides us.
There are about, five people at this bar. And there is
one guy that is locked into this match. And every time Spain does something good, he's screaming.
Before we dive into the Detroit Lions,
yes,
got to get your guys' thoughts on one of the GOATs announcing his retirement at the end of 2025. Do you know who that is?
Tell me.
John Cena said he's hanging up the jean shorts after 2025.
Better actor than wrestler, in my opinion. I think he's a great actor.
I agree, but I don't know. Have you seen some of the wrestling matches?
I mean, he's fantastic in wrestling, don't get me wrong, but I think that's why he's retiring in wrestling.
It's funny how Wyatt asked if we've seen. I've never actually watched wrestling.
I've watched the highlights. I don't watch it very intently, but I think if you were going to ask me why he's still a very young man. I mean, what is he, 40?
No, Cena is 47.
Okay.
That's impressive.
He probably could still wrestle another 5 or 10 years if he really wanted to, but I bet he's got a lot of lucrative movie offers coming. So, he's a really good actor.
So next year's WrestleMania will be in Las Vegas. Ben, you want to go? Huh?
Are you giving me free tickets?
If you're buying tickets, yes.
I'm not gonna go.
That's how I feel about the Super Bowl. I'll go if someone pays for my ticket, but I'm not paying that much money to go watch a football game that's better on TV.
I really enjoyed the Zac Efron movie about the
that was a really good movie.
The Von Erich family.
Hilarious.
Yes.
Hilarious. He was
Yeah.
No, with a John Cena movie.
No. I was going to say.
Because you would not describe the Zac Efron movie as hilarious. No, that was John tragically sad.
John Cena was in the one movie with, what was her name? The comedian, where he played her boyfriend. I forget the name of the movie.
Oh, wasn't that
it's not Knocked Up.
It was LeBron James was also
LeBron James.
With,
I forget the
Amy
name
Schumer
of it.
Was
Amy,
in it?
Yes, Amy Schumer. Movie. Thank you, Wyatt, for coming to the rescue.
She was, John Cena was amazing in that movie.
Guys in the back.
Thank you. Guys, appreciate that.
Train wreck. I would have put my money on Larry.
That was the movie I was thinking of.
Larry back there also got Matt Hicks, Sean McCollum behind the scenes here at Bar Cannon at the D. Wyatt also just continuing the producer tradition here at Beeson of being way too invested in pro wrestling. Seems like every producer at the network, it's like a...
Britton used to be...
DeMond is a big...
DeMond used to be a professional wrestler,
Did he really?
He gets a...
In which league?
I can't remember where he was, but yeah, he said he wrestled...
A professional wrestler works at our network, and I was not aware of this?
My point is DeMond gets a pass. I mean, you've got your... You kind of have your niche of... professional football co-owner, which you're the only, you and Brian Ortega are the only two owners.
I liked wrestling back in the day. Stone Cold Steve Austin was my favorite wrestler back growing up. Shawn Michaels. But that's kind of when it died with me.
You know what? I love the docs on pro wrestling are fascinating.
Yes.
The Ric Flair 30 for 30.
Yes.
Unbelievable. What was it? The 30 for 30 Tommy. That was a great one, too.
Andre the Giant's on HBO.
Yeah,
that was really
a good one, too.
Yeah.
So it's great for the doc part of it. I mean, the actual... watching of it,
I think to me, and don't get me wrong, they're incredible athletes. I don't take anything away from their athleticism and their performance art, but it's a time thing for me, and like when they're on and how long the matches are and just how much you have to be invested to really be a fan. I lost that ability to really invest time when I became high school, college years, and then I just kind of fell off from the storylines. But it's very entertaining and they're very, very athletic.
So, well, we've come with all this conversation here that Ben will be joining me at WrestleMania to watch Cena's final match.
No, he won't appreciate it. I will appreciate it if you pay for my ticket.
Yeah, we're all going to go. A VSIN group.
Oh, wow, you're really packing on the dollars there if you're going to pay for all of our seats.
Sean McCollum said he's got me.
Okay, Sean's nice. Got you. Sean, you got me too, bud? I hope because I ain't paying a dime to get in, but I'll go.
I think if you take that stance now, it's a very smart way to do it, Jared.
Let's leave it at this. I'll take all the money from my BTTS win, and I'll give it to Wyatt so he can buy us all.
Here's a good segue. You know, Cena, one of his best matches, WrestleMania 23 against Shawn Michaels at Ford Field.
Nice.
In Detroit. I was wondering how Wyatt's a professional broadcaster, Jared. I was wondering how he would get this transition to the Detroit Lions. We will be starting, and we start to do this across the network here, but taking team-by-team breakdowns for the 2024 NFL season, especially now that our NFL guide is out. Jared, I'm fascinated to get your thoughts on a Detroit Lion team that usually, when you have a team like Detroit that was so hyped going into 2023 and then actually lived up to it, you then have this sort of come-down-to-earth mentality from the general betting community. But because the Lions kept their OC Ben Johnson, who is all but assumed to be gone for one of the head coaching openings around the NFL, now that is flipped back, and we are in year number two of back-to-back hype train fever surrounding the Detroit Lions. Your favorite to win the NFC North, double-digit win total. Now, where do you stand from a general X's and O's perspective here on the Lions?
I mean, there's a lot to like. They should be the number one seed in the NFC. That's where I would put them as the ceiling. I think the floor is very high as well because they have a really good offensive line and they have a culture. And I think if you have those two things, the floor is going to be high. Do I think they're going to win the Super Bowl? I think they have a better chance than maybe some of the naysayers think. And the naysayers are kind of in the, Detroit hasn't won anything lately kind of vibe. But I don't care about that. Like, that is meaningless to me. Unless you're the Jets, you're not cursed as a franchise. So the Lions are not that franchise. They have a chance. And look at the schedule. It's very favorable. And you just look at what they do early on in their schedule. And I know that game against the Rams is a little bit tough. But they're favored in 13 out of 17 games this year. They're favored by more than three. So 3.5 or more in 7 of their 17 games. So just right there, you feel good about them getting to 11 wins, which is the win total of 10.5. They need to go 11-6 in order for you to cash your ticket. The one thing that is concerning is I don't think that there was any drastic improvements to the defense. The defense was okay last year, but it wasn't great. I think that's going to be the biggest question. And can the offensive line hold up in front of Goff? I actually think Goff, and our pal Will Hill did great analysis on this for Fox Sports recently, so I'm kind of piggybacking off of what he said. You don't see quarterbacks priced so favorably to win MVP on a team that is expected to maybe be the number one seed and perhaps win 12 games. Like, usually the quarterbacks on those teams, Lamar, Mahomes, Allen, these are 5, 8, 10, 9 to 1, you know, MVP bets. Goff's 30 to 1. So if you want to see where something might be mispriced, the narrative against Goff, whatever it is, you think he's goofy, he looks like Ryan Gosling, whatever your hate is, bias is against Jared Goff, I think it doesn't align with where the Lions are priced as a team. Because the Lions are priced like filet mignon. They're favorite to win the division. They're one of the highest win totals in the NFL. But their quarterback is priced like chuck steak. So if you want to say where something is mispriced, I would say that. But yeah, I expect the Lions to be really good this year.
Chuck steak catching strays here chuck on steak. The Tuesday edition of Sharp Money.
Yeah. You the stuff about, I buy at the store to make for my food.
You
not
talk
the
about,
stuff I get at right. Bacon Nation.
That's a good callback, too, from earlier in the show. You talk about not being all that impressed with the defensive additions. To me, it's at least a side of the ball where Detroit is trying to improve upon. And it honestly reminds me of when the Kansas City Chiefs were this up-and-coming group, and they had a devastating conference championship game loss, just like Detroit did. And the question was, well, if all Steve Spagnuolo can do as a DC is just get them to be average, you feel really, really good with the sort of offensive weapons they have. You can make a really compelling case that it is very similar for Detroit this year, who finished bottom 10 unit defending the pass. Most teams just pass at will against the Lions last year. They tried to shore that up. Carlton Davis, Amik Robertson brought in to fortify the secondary. You draft Terry and Arnold in your first round at corner. You also bring some guys to try to get your pass rushing at a higher level to not expose that poor secondary with DJ Reader, Marcus Davenport coming in. You could make a case that there were some really compelling additions here, even if it might take some time for them to gel and really show on paper. But that is where I would be up higher on Detroit, is expecting those additions to it eventually merge and forge themselves into a top 15 unit. Right now, until we've seen it, it's really hard for me to get there because we have a lot of evidence to support that this Lions defensive secondary in particular is a long way away. But who's to say Aaron Glenn can't get those young guys to all mesh together really well?
The case you just laid out is their Super Bowl case. Like that's what takes them to that next level. Aaron Glenn getting it all. Now, he's a very aggressive coach. Does he change his scheme now that, you know, he has a little better personnel? We'll see. It's going to be an interesting year defensively. Offensively, I feel like the ceiling is very high and the floor is even higher.
I tend to be a little more pessimistic when it comes to those defensive personnel and how quick it actually happens. So I want to see it before I believe it. But that, to me, is what hinges this Lions season. We'll keep talking on NFC North teams when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on VSiN.com, check out all of our best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides, including Adam Burke, VSiN managing editor, going to join us in studio for two segments at the top of our next
Let's
hour,
go.
5 p.m. Eastern. Adam's got his write-up all ready to go for a big card tonight in Major League Baseball. Back on Sharp Money, I'm in for Patrick. Rest of the week, Jared Smith next to me. Jared has already cashed a both teams to score bet here on Spain and France. 73rd minute. Spain is starting to park the bus a little bit here, Jared, as they are content to play on the back foot, leading 2-1 over France. This becomes desperation time for the Le Bleu. But that under
Spain.
That under 4.5 live, once it got to 2-1, yep. We talked about it at halftime. What goes up must come down, and you generally don't see soccer matches that are 5-4. I mean, it's just not how it works. There are some club matches every once in a while that you see that, but on high-level international soccer, like a Euro semi, tends not to be a thing you see, and it is certainly slowed down in the second half. For both teams' XGs, I'm just updating my live stats here, each remain below 1. Wow. Which is pretty telling. Actually, it's even. France slightly ahead in expected goals, 0.74 to 0.73 for Spain. Yet all of the first half shots on target, all three of them, went in for goals.
The goal that Spain scored to take the lead 2-1 was one of the best goals I've seen in the
Danny Olmo, pride of RB Leipzig.
It might have been the goal that got it to 1-1. It was whichever goal was the 16-year-old.
Oh, yeah, the first goal you're talking about.
Yeah, so that was the first goal. So that was the equalizer.
Lamal.
That was one of the best goals of the entire tournament.
You're like, how does Barcelona just keep getting these teenagers?
Well, they showed a picture from 2007 when Lionel Messi was holding the baby version of him. And now he's scoring, the youngest player ever to score in a European.
How did they know when he was a baby? He would be.
I don't know. That's a great question.
It's weird how that lineage sort of things work.
It's a great question.
I don't know. Were you even old enough to walk? So by proxy, you could not have picked a ball?
I guess maybe his family knew. I don't know. Like, they knew. They had good genes, I guess. They breed them over there. And, I mean, soccer in these European countries is literally religion. So, you know, maybe it was an immaculate conception.
His dad is Moroccan. His mom is from Equatorial Guinea.
Oh, wow.
The thing I learned today is that his mom is of Equatoguinean. That is apparently how you say that descent, which is fascinating.
You know, I think soccer is the most unique sport in the world. I honestly do. I think the world nature of it and just kind of the slow plodding nature of it makes it an acquired taste from a viewing standpoint here in this country.
Yeah.
But when you think about the world, not just this country, the world, it is to me the most interesting sport because it's the most played. And you get these legacies. I mean, would that ever happen in the NFL where a guy out of the womb is taking a picture with Tom Brady as the next quarterback?
Right.
Like it's just...
Are we talking about baby Gronk?
No, but even he wasn't a baby.
I'm kidding on that
one.
Please
even
don't.
He was a... Yeah, I don't even want to discuss
Come
him.
On,
He's
Wyatt.
An absolute whack job. But it's the only sport that has this like legacy type vibe to it. And yeah, like, just the culture of it is just so fascinating.
On a side note, what is happening in the U.S. right now, where basically the reports coming out are that the U.S. Federation for Soccer is just trying to wait this out until people stop caring and complaining and calling for Greg Berhalter to be fired. You think you're just going to sit back and wait 2 weeks for the story to not be a thing and just kind of hope people forget about Greg Berhalter still being the head coach? It is an absolute embarrassment what the U.S. Soccer Federation has become.
Well, again,
the fact that they have not yet fired a guy who never should have been a coach in the first place, who had high family ties, who was as embarrassing as it gets trying to slander Gio Reyna's name, the pettiness that ensued with trying to leave him off the team roster, one of the best players in the country. It is just a shame that soccer is taking a backseat the way it is, and that there is so much corruption, which, I mean, I guess in the U.S., I give them credit. They have borrowed from other international countries of being incredibly corrupt in their soccer federations,
sure.
But that is probably the one thing you don't want to emulate from the rest of the world on that front.
I think soccer in this country, unfortunately, is doomed because I just think the culture of soccer does not fit the culture of America. It's just, it's too low scoring. It's too it doesn't have the same excitement as some of the other sports. And unfortunately, we don't have the infrastructure that the other countries do in terms of the talent development. And that's obvious when you watch these matches that these other countries just breed, like they literally breed these players. 16 years old, there's already a kid on Spain who's what looks like one of the best players in the world. Like it just that we haven't seen that in this country. And I don't think it's ever going to change because I just think the other sports are so much more popular and there's so much more money to be made.
And yet there's no excuse not to, if you're being honest. Kylian Mbappe, great example, too, for France. Comes up as a teenager. He's now leading that club. 78th minute now. France has had a couple golden opportunities as well while you're just talking, Jared, but unable to equalize as they look to push this match at least into extra time. Let's finish up the thought here on the Detroit Lions since we are starting our NFL previews today, at least. When I say we're starting today, I mean when Jared and I are together, which means we'll have plenty of these discussions still to come. Detroit Lions talking about a 10.5 win total, heavily juiced to the over, favored in the NFC North. If you're actually looking at specific ways to bet Jared, you mentioned the Jared Goff MVP numbers, which
That's
have started to come down. Is that still the most palatable for you if you're looking to isolate Detroit?
Because again, if you think about where Detroit is, let's go with the bull case for Detroit. You can hear the clapping in our background from this one random Spain fan who's just very excited about this corner kick that's about to happen. He's right there on the screen. He's really fired up for this match. I'm pulling up right now the other quarterbacks that are at the top of the market for MVP.
Mahomes plus 450.
Exactly.
Josh Allen plus 850. Stroud plus 850. Burrow 9-1. Love 14-1. Lamar Jackson 14-1. Purdy 14-1. Rodgers hurt 16-1. Prescott 17-1. Herbert 22. Tagovailoa 25, Richardson 30, and now Goff, who has taken some money. He was 40-1 at one point. Now he's down to
30. That's the perfect example. Anthony Richardson and Jared Goff are priced the same to win the MVP. Anthony Richardson's on a team. What's the Colts win total? 8.5. They're lucky if they win the division. They're the second, maybe third team.
Third favorite.
In that division. You can make a case they should be second, but they definitely shouldn't be ahead of the Texans. So they are the clear number two, borderline number three team in their own division. Yet Anthony Richardson's 30-1 to win MVP. And I understand why Richardson maybe gets a little bit more attention than Goff. The running, the ability to really, you know, the physical tools that Jared Goff doesn't have. But I don't care about any of that, because what have we seen the history of MVP awards? It's been the team that's had the most success during the regular season. That quarterback gets the award. If the Lions are 13-4 and they win the division and the number one seed in the NFC, which, again, if you just take what the win total is for Detroit and where their market expectation is, that's not a far-fetched projection. In fact, I would say 11 wins is kind of the floor, maybe 10 at the absolute lowest. I think the ceiling's 13 or 14. That's how good I think Detroit can be this year if what Ben said about their defense comes to fruition. You're telling me Jared Goff is not an MVP favorite if that's the case for Detroit's season? Like, I just don't see how that's not happening.
Another great way to corroborate that, Jared, the odds on DK right now, most wins, which if you have the most wins,
how
you feel like
MVP?
Your quarterback is at the very least one of the top three
100%.
Finalists. Detroit's 8-1. Goff 30-1 on the futures board. Colts 65-1. And yet their quarterback is in the same
price.
It makes
no sense.
I'll look at the number one seed, too.
That's where you can find some value with these markets, when you can try to cross-reference those types of scenarios.
Lions 6-1 to be the number one seed in the NFC. And if we're just comparing, Colts 25-1. And that's, again, is that the be-all, end-all? Do you have to be the one seed necessarily to win MVP? No, you have to put up really, really good stats first and foremost. But when Jared Goff does not play a game outdoors until the back half of the season, and Detroit already has the infrastructure built to feel really confident in his stat-producing ability, and the big question is just the defense, well, then you see where the thought is tied into a potential bet there.
They have, I would say, one of the best offensive lines in football, which makes me more confident he's going to stay healthy, which is, to me, the most important thing when you're betting these season-long markets. Anthony Richardson's played one season, and how many games in that season? Because he was hurt midway through. And I'm not trying to knock Richardson. I'm just trying to give you a price comparison. When we are betting awards markets or futures markets in June, July for a February completion, we are trying to make a bet that is not priced correctly. If I knew who was going to win the MVP right now, this would be really easy. But that's not what we're betting on right now. We're not betting on who we think is going to win MVP. We're betting on which prices are wrong. And that price, to me, is just wrong.
Sunday night game will be pretty wild for Detroit after all the hype that has led into that season.
Oh, absolutely.
Lions-Rams, Sunday night football. Remember what the Lions did in a primetime spot last year?
I think
the season.
That's
expectations
a really,
a little
really
bit different
good
now.
Spot for Detroit. I really do.
Because
Aaron Donald,
defensive line, new look, a lot of transition, a lot of questions about the longevity of Matthew Stafford now that he's back for yet another year for Detroit.
A lot of rookies on the Rams this year. Yeah. A lot of rookies for the first time ever. They don't really have rookies. They've never had rookies. They've never drafted. How many times have they drafted in the
Bay Area? That is very, very true.
They have a very young team this year, comparatively speaking.
No doubt. When we come back, a segment we've been looking forward to all show, talking some Olympic betting. Odds are out on the Olympic basketball futures on the men's side as camp is opened up today in Vegas. We'll break that down when we come back here on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money continues on this Tuesday afternoon from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D, where there has been some pretty significant Major League Baseball injury news. Jared Smith, Adam Burke's going to join us for the next half hour coming up starting in 15 minutes, but yet another Dodger to hit the IL.
Tyler Glass now, unfortunately. Wow. I don't know how I feel about the Dodgers this year. I really don't. I think there's a lot of hype around Shohei, obviously, but I don't think they're a very good team. I think they're a collection of good players, but I don't think they're the best team. I think the Phillies are the best team in the National League.
And yet, Philadelphia still based on preseason and priors, still continues to be somewhat slept on, even though the market from regular season futures has caught on because of how good they've been.
Yeah.
Well, the Braves are going to catch them for the NL East. Just saying.
I don't think so.
Anywho, but
you're betting that what else?
Yeah, no, I don't bet on my teams. That's a rule that I have. Jared, quick question for you: who's under more pressure as a manager to win this year, Boone or Dave Roberts?
I'm biased because obviously my Yankees roots, but I think Boone's done less in his tenure than Roberts has done. So there's my first gut instinct answer.
Pretty easy. I mean, one has won a World Series as a manager. The other is not.
And the other also has not had the same even close to success. Like Roberts, they've been to the LCS more times, I want to say, than the Yankees have. Although the Yankees have been a few times during this run. But when they've gone south, it's gone really south, where I think the floor for Roberts has been slightly higher.
But do you think if Dave Roberts, if the Dodgers get eliminated in the first round, because they'll probably get a first round bye, like they have the last 2 years, that they're going to move on from him?
I don't know enough about that situation. Okay. I have been begging for the Yankees to move on from Boone for years.
I was surprised they didn't do it last year.
I've been surprised for the last 3 years.
I don't see it happening with Roberts, because you can point to total randomness the way the baseball postseason format is set up. You can also point to lots of regular season failures with Aaron Boone as a manager, and the pressure has been mounting for some time.
Also, agree.
I'm much more in the camp of Booney before.
Baseball Roberts. Managers are irrelevant anyways. I think they should just completely, like, robot umps. Let's get robot managers.
You're not giving Pat Murphy any credit for the Brewers
I don't know what's good. The Brewers have alligator blood. I don't know what you guys have
alligator.
Done. What you guys have done in Milwaukee.
Frozen custard into
They've
our veins.
Hit
That's
more grand slams in the last 3 weeks than most teams have done in the entire season.
Yeah, 7 grand slams.
It is
Ben, have you come up with a name for it? That was kind of your homework that I had last week that I didn't really tell you but kind of told you.
Yeah, you definitely didn't tell me. What is it Harvey's Wallbangers reimagined? Because that's what it used to be back in 1982.
What's the promotion? The Brewers win 13 games. It's free.
George Webb's.
Yeah,
free George Webb's.
Incorporate that in for the grand slam.
Here's the only question that matters.
How about this? Murph's Mashers.
Is it sustainable in the second half? Because I'll be honest, I am a few days away from doing my annual All-Star break. Reload, catch my breath. And one of the things that I always do is look at the fan graphs. I haven't looked yet because I wanted to wait till the All-Star break. I've been dying to look at what the actual projected win total was or what the expected win total was for the Brewers compared to what they've actually won. My guess is it's lower, but you never know with these wacky expected numbers. But this is about the time when I make that reassessment on whether or not it's sustainable, what teams did in the first half. And my instinct on Milwaukee says no, but I've been snake bitten fading. I faded this team last year. They went over. I faded this team this year. They're going over. Like I keep getting the Brewers wrong.
And the reality is Brewers have already made one ad before the deadline. Aaron Cipolli, who's a useful piece to a rotation in desperate need of parts. And that's really the big weakness right now for Milwaukee. You're about to get the equivalent of a huge trade deadline ad without even having to make a trade because Devin Williams is coming back in the next couple of weeks post All-Star break. Best closer in the NL. Now he fortifies a bullpen that has already been really good with pitchers pitching out of position relative to their expected roles coming into the year.
Woodruff is out for the whole year, right?
Yes.
Okay. Woodruff, on the shelf.
I think I'm going to not fade them in the second half because I'm calling uncle.
Yeah.
I cry uncle, right? I'm like the meme in, who's gonna in be, Rocky. Throw in the damn towel.
Who's going to be the team in the NL Central to catch them?
The Cardinals.
The Cardinals are within four and a half. But I also would tell you the Cardinals have done. It has been it's very similar to what the Mets have done, but because it's not the New York market, that has been a little bit underreported. St. Louis is just as Jekyll and Hyde, hot and cold of a team as the Mets.
I think they're getting Max Scherzer, though. So we'll see.
Max Scherzer played his college baseball at?
Mizzou.
You knew that, obviously. But then
Scherzer's available, and I think the Cardinals are a perfect fit. And as you mentioned, there's a geographical alignment there.
That Cardinal devil magic. It just never seems to go.
I bet the Cardinals pre-flop to win the division. That's the reason why I don't feel like I have to make another bet on Milwaukee, because if they do slip up in any capacity, the only team that can catch them right now is St. Louis. So I feel confident that if it ain't Milwaukee, it's going to be St. Louis. But I there's voodoo magic. I don't know. You guys put something in the brats over there. Something is weird.
It's a spotted cow.
It's called beer. Yeah.
It's called beer.
You put beer in your brats. It makes them a lot better.
All right, that's
what we do. I'll be in Milwaukee in a couple of weeks. Excited to get back to the home.
Okay.
in a short while. We'll be excited for that. We're into stoppage time here. First of two Euro semifinals. We'll let you know once it is officially done. France has 2 minutes and change to force an equalizer and send this match to extra time, or else it will be Spain. But speaking of France, I was actually really intrigued, Jared, by the odds that are now out for the Olympic basketball, where the assumption is, well, this will be USA running in a route as we go to the Olympics in France. These games, in large part, will be played in Lille, not all in Paris, coming up here as camp is just underway now for the U.S. men's national team in Vegas. U.S. about a $5 favorite. I think what's tough, Jared, for a lot of bettors is we all know, any of us who follow this understand how much better the international game is now than it has been in the past. But the issue is it's gotten so much better that the pool of talent is spread out so well that it's not like there's an obvious number two team to dethrone the USA. But we also know that sportsbooks with any sort of nationalistic approach to any sort of sport like this, and the Olympics is a great example, will make you take the heaviest of taxes as far as the payment on betting a team like USA. That's why it fascinates me with the way the groups are set up. And France got the easiest group by far if you're looking at, you know, the overall basis of depth here. And 14-1, I'm at least intrigued on a team that should win their group and should avoid the U.S. until at the very least the semifinals.
Yeah, if you want to talk about best players, obviously the U.S., but France has two really good ones in Wemby and Gobert, and Greece has Giannis. I know there's some other NBA talent kind of smattered around this. I think the most intriguing wager right now is actually one of the futures markets where you can bet on the scoring leader.
That is interesting.
I think Edwards, like, I wouldn't bet Embiid. I think the minutes is going to catch him. Like, if I'm the Sixers, I'm telling whoever's coaching Team USA and in charge of that, like, no, he's playing not as many minutes as whatever, however many minutes you thought he was going to play, subtract something from it. I think Edwards makes sense at 5-1. He's the young bull, right? I don't know if this is his, I don't think this is his first. It might be 4 years. Might be his first Olympics. It was his first Olympics.
Because he was on the FIBA team.
Yeah,
two
I remember
years
the
ago.
FIBA team he played for, but that was 2 years. So now you get the Olympics, 4 years, first Olympics. He kind of has that USA mentality where he's going to take the bull by the horns. I could see him being the leading scorer on the team. I could see Tatum maybe being the leading scorer. I wouldn't put LeBron in that category. I wouldn't put KD maybe. But Embiid, I don't think the minutes, you know, to me, it's a younger player that I think is going to, you know, probably play the most because they're less concerned about his workload, right? Load management's all the rage in the NBA, but we'll see if that carries over to the Olympics. I'm fascinated to see the rotations. I'm fascinated to see who gets the start, right? And what the starting five looks like and kind of who comes off the bench first. Those are the things I'm going to be looking at early on in the Olympics. Starting five, rotations, trying to figure out if there's any kind of, you know, rhythm or system to how the U.S. is playing. And then, you know, you make your odds, you make your adjustment off of the first game or so.
Absolutely. And it's why I'd also look at the way the groups are set up. It is not specifically, say, Group A plays second place of Group B because there's only three groups. So it's a very convoluted format. But as long as you finish first in your group and you assume the U.S. will finish first in their group as well, you would avoid them in the quarterfinals. Hence why France, who play in a pretty weak group here, it's Germany, it's Brazil, it's Japan, who should not be threats to the depth that France has. And also, let's not forget, playing on the home court, and will have a pretty significant edge in that regard. 14-1, if you're looking at a value play, not bad either. Unfortunately, the French will not be advancing into the Euro 2024 final. It is over in Munich. Long look on the face of Didier Deschamps as it finishes 2-1. Spain comes back from conceding an early ninth-minute goal. Goals by Lamine Yamal, the 16-year-old, and Danny Olmo. It was 2-1 in the 25th minute, Jared. You said it then. You ended up being completely right as the final score holds. Spain 2, France 1. Spain wins is about $1.30 pre-match favorite on the advance line. They were about plus 175, plus 180 in the three-way market. Total goes over, albeit immediately in the first half. In-game unders all hit on the under 4.5, Jared, and you won some money. Congratulations, sir.
This was, I'm not going to say it always works out this way, but I'll be honest. The second that went 2-1, it just felt like that was it.
Congratulations to Spain, who have moved on. France out. Will it be the Dutch? Will it be the English? That will be what we wait for tomorrow. We'll break that down in our final hour of the show. But up next, for rousing two segments, Adam Burke, VSiN Managing Editor, joins us to talk all things Major League Baseball, a little bit of NFL and college football as well, here on Sharp Money.